Welcome, everyone, to the Developmentor podcast, your source for interviews and content on careers and technology. I'm your host, Grant Ingersoll. We are in full swing now, having recorded over 30 episodes with people from a variety of tech backgrounds. If you're new to the show, I'd encourage you to go listen to previous episodes at developmentor.com or on Apple or Spotify. On this podcast, we have two simple goals. We want to showcase interesting people in tech across a variety of roles and also highlight the different paths those people took to get to that point in their career. Today's guest is yet another great example of how a person's career evolves over time. He went to school for computer engineering, worked a variety of development, systems administration, and technician jobs before getting into programming and consulting and eventually podcasting. Along the way, he's also created a whole series of podcasts with more than 70,000 weekly subscribers, focused on a variety of technologies like JavaScript and Ruby and other programming languages. Please welcome to the show, Charles Max Wood. Charles, great to have you here.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show, Chuck. I mean, I guess the turnabout is fair play, as I was a guest on one of your shows way back, I think in 2011.
Yeah, it was. So I started a show in 2008 is when I started my first podcast. I wound up taking over a screencast series not long after that. And so I changed the name. So you were on the Teach Me to Code podcast.
Wow. I can barely even remember 2011 at this point, but, perhaps that's a great way to kick things off then of, you know, why don't you take a few moments and introduce yourself and some of those key career milestones, like you just mentioned, kicking off the podcast, you know, how you got your start, how you got into programming, all of those kinds of things, I think would be a great intro for the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm on a mission to create a podcast for every programming community that will lead them to create terrific careers and successful lives. I'm well on my way, and yet there's so much more work to do, right? Because yeah, there are so many communities out there that need some kind of content that's going to guide them along that path. This is a good example of, you know, some of the skills and ideas and just giving people an example of what's possible. As you mentioned, I graduated from Brigham Young University with a computer engineering degree. I had been programming a bit before that. My grandfather actually was he was a chemical engineer, and he actually invented technology that was used on the space shuttle. Essentially what it did is it checked the inside of the solid rocket booster to make sure there wasn't any contamination, which could cause the solid rocket booster to explode if it wasn't clean.
Cool.
So he kind of inspired me to get into technology, built his own computer at one point, did a whole bunch of other really, really interesting things. And so I wanted to be an engineer like he was. So I took electronics classes in high school, went in and signed up for the electrical engineering major in college, took a couple of computer classes because they were required, figured out that, hey, this is a lot of fun. At the same time, I thought that the computer programming classes were kind of a joke because we never built anything serious. So I switched over to computer engineering, focused a lot on hardware, and wound up getting an IT job at the university that later parlayed into a job at a company in Utah called Mosey. And while I was there, I was running the tech support team. We went to our boss and said, we need a ticketing system. And he said, we can't afford a ticketing system. So we be programmers. We created our own.
Careful what you ask for, right?
That's right. So initially what it was that we would get emails in. We wrote a system that would pull the emails out. It had canned responses in it so that, you know, for the common stuff, we could just click, 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 send. It was all in a Ruby on Rails app. Eventually grew to actually be a full-on ticketing system. And it got to the point where they actually put a full-time programmer on it right before I left the company. At that point, I knew I wanted to be a programmer. I was on the management track. I was running the tech support team, but I figured out pretty fast that I wanted to be on the programming track. So I left. I went and worked at a consulting company. I was there for about a year, and then they ran out of Rails work, and so they laid me off. Incidentally, that was my third wedding anniversary when they laid me off. Hmm. Went home. By then, I was already podcasting and doing the screencasts. So I went home. I applied to a bunch of places. My future boss actually, when I applied, I showed up, told him who I was. He went and checked out some of the videos. So by the time I showed up, he already knew he wanted to hire me. So 5 minutes after I left, he called me up and said, "Hey, do you want a job?" And I said, "Sure. When can you start?" "Well, I can start tomorrow because I got laid off this morning." Wow. And then I went home and took my wife out to dinner for our wedding anniversary. So
talk about a range of emotions in one day. Oh, yeah. Man. I mean, yeah. Laid off in the morning, job in the afternoon, wedding anniversary. Yep. At night.
Yep.
Holy
so
cow.
Yeah, I worked there for a year, met a bunch of great people, left there. I went and worked at another company that did crime data. Managed crime data for law enforcement agencies. They actually had crimereports.com where the public could go and see where crimes had happened around wherever they lived. You know, we anonymized the data. You could see what block it happened on. You couldn't see the actual address to the crime.
Right.
But I worked there for 6 months, and then they had made some decisions that took them from being in the black to being back in the red. So they had a big layoff and they laid me off. And at that point I was tired of the ups and downs of, well, I can either have a job that I love where I can't wait to get out of there, or I can have a job that I hate and they're angry at me for leaving. So I went freelance and I did that for 6 years. One of the best things I ever did. And I really got a taste for kind of controlling my fate and you know, controlling my career. Picked up clients. I could tell stories and stories and stories, but I'll let you ask the questions if you want to know more about that. And about 8 or 9 months after I did that, so this was back in 2011. So, you know, right around when we met up, I was freelancing, and my friend James Gray from the Ruby community, he actually put up a tweet and said, "I wish there was a panel podcast for Ruby." And I'd been thinking the same thing. I'd been listening to the twit.tv podcast. And so I reached out to him. We got a bunch of people together. I bought a domain. I set up a website. I think he named the show Ruby Rogues. And we were off. 6 months later, a friend of mine here in Utah, Jameson Dance, comes to me and says, "I want a show like Ruby Rogues, but for JavaScript." I tried to help him start it and eventually just wound up starting it and running it myself. Started a freelancing podcast around the same time. A couple of years later, I decided I wanted to learn iOS development. So I started an iOS podcast. I still don't do iOS development, never have. But we still have the show. It's been running for 6 years or something now. A couple of years after that, we started an Angular podcast. And then it got to the point where I had to choose. I didn't have time to do both the podcast and the software development, the contracting. So I went to my wife and I basically told her to tell me to keep contracting because that was a responsible thing to do. And she told me to do what I wanted that would make me happy.
Wow.
And so for the last 3 years, I have been full-time running devchat.tv, which is a podcast network where we're dedicated, as I said before, to creating a quality podcast for every programming community that teaches them to have a terrific career and a quality and successful life.
Wow. I'm just listening, taking that all in, because there's so many great things in there. I want to go back a little bit because we're going to get to the consulting and we're going to get to the podcast and that those leaps of faith, because I think those are super important inflection points in somebody's career. But I want to come back actually to two people you mentioned, and the one was your grandfather, and then this friend or colleague, James Gray. And I mean, you know, part of what I think this podcast is about is this, you know, it's in the name, is this notion of mentorship. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I want to dig in a little bit more there and talk about, if you can, like, you know, go a little bit deeper on the impact those folks have had. Your grandfather, I mean, it sounds like did some amazing work, but also took the time to spend time with you on it. And so think about some of the key lessons like that you extracted out of those relationships.
Yeah,
how that helped you.
So my earliest recollection of my grandfather, we moved back to Utah. My dad was a dentist, so we moved back from Georgia where he went to dental school when I was five and lived with them for a little while. And then, you know, eventually we, you know, moved out into our own place. And I remember specifically going over to his house as he was, you know, he was always inventing stuff. And one of the things that he invented, I was probably 12 or 13. He invented an ellipsometer. And I don't know if folks know what that is. What it is it's a tool that measures the depth of the oxide layer on silicon disks that they use to make computer chips. And he had designed a system all on his own, and it fit in about the size of a briefcase. And if you go back, you know, 20, 25 years, ellipsometers took up an entire room. So the fact that he had one that could measure disks and could do it faster and would fit in a briefcase was a pretty novel thing.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And, you know, and he would talk to me about this stuff. And, you know, he showed me what it was and how it worked. And, you know, obviously I didn't have a deep understanding of it, but, you know, it was that kind of thing. And so we would spend time together just talking about whatever he was working on.
That's awesome.
And yeah, it was just amazing.
Well, and then I think, you know, to reflect there a little bit, I mean, I think in many ways, what you're then doing with the podcast, to tie it back to that, is in many ways, you continuing that legacy of your grandfather teaching, right? And taking the time. Yeah. That's really cool. You know, like so many things to unpack in here, because I think, like, you know, in many ways, if I think about your career arc, you did a whole bunch of jobs, and in many ways, all of these, you know, either getting laid off or the shorter stints at places, time as a system administrator, in many ways prepared you for what you're doing now, this ability to go across a lot of different communities and sound intelligent and interact with those communities in an intelligent way, such that you can then earn the trust to be a respected member of that community to create a podcast. You know, talk then a little bit about, or help me understand a little bit more, some of those formative years around acquiring those skills and how you put that in perspective now.
Yeah, it's interesting as far as like the being a mentor and explaining things to people and you know, having an impact on people's careers. And I still get emails probably every week from people who have let me know that, you know, the podcasts have impacted them in one way or another. And sometimes it's, hey, you know, you taught me these things and, you know, they came up in interview questions, right? And sometimes it's, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do. I got laid off. One of my friends told me to learn to code. I started going to meetups and boot camps, listen to your podcast, and, you know, I'm making more money than I ever have. And my kid goes to a better school, and, you know, my marriage was on the rocks, but, you know, we were able to work that out because of something that you talked about on the show. I mean, I've heard all kinds of stuff like this. Wow. And it's crazy because it's like, we're just talking about programming, but at the same time, you know, we're talking about life too. And, you know, so sometimes we are going into the personal stuff, and sometimes we're, you know, we do picks at the end of the show, which are just shout outs about stuff that we're looking at. And so, you know, some of the impact we've had have been, well, you shouted out about this book, right? And I went and read it, and it, you know, and it's just something that I picked up because I was interested in it, right? I wasn't looking to make, you know, an impact on anyone else. I just thought it was something that people might like. And it has that impact.
Yeah, that's interesting too, because I think you even mentioned like some of these podcasts, if I heard you correctly, you started because you wanted to learn that technology. Is that right?
Yeah. So my first podcast was called Rails Coach. And the idea was, so I was listening to a podcast called Rails Envy. And, you know, talk about mentors. Rails Envy was done by Greg Pollack. And I don't know if you know Greg. He's the founder of Code School. Currently, I think he's doing Vue Mastery, I think is the company he's running. And anyway, he sold Code School to Pluralsight a while back. And anyway, so I emailed him and I thought, oh, you know, this guy's a celebrity on the web, right? And, I'll never hear back from him. The next day I heard back from, you know, and I was like, and what I said was, doing a podcast looks like fun. And I just don't know what to do. And so he emailed me back and basically told me what to do and encouraged me to interview developers because I told him I was new. And so he's like, well, go interview people and get to know them. And then, you know, you're going to have these connections and you'll get mentorship that way. And so I said, okay, well, do you want to be my first interview? So episode one is with Greg Pollack. Episode three was with James Gray. And I interviewed a whole bunch of people. Episode 50 was with David Heinemeier Hansen, who created the Ruby on Rails framework. Yeah. And then, yeah, I wound up, you know, connecting with a whole bunch of other people. Eventually, I got invited to ApacheCon. And I think that's where we met. And then we talked about Lucene and Solr.
Yeah, indeed.
And so I was able to just connect with these people who were doing all these interesting things. And if I didn't have a guest that week, then I would just talk about what I was learning about Ruby on Rails, which was usually pretty basic stuff. But, you know, people were picking it up and really enjoying it. And it turned out that, you know, just that new programmer perspective on here's what I'm learning and here's how I'm learning it, it really connected with people. And then the other thing was that, yeah, I had this list of people that I could go to when I got stuck or had a problem or a question, and I'd wind up getting help. And at the same time, I also started working at a company called Solution Stream, which was a consultancy. That was my first programming job after Mosey. Mosey's where I found podcasting in the first place. I had a coworker that bought an iPod and was listening to him and got me hooked on him. But, you know, I had a great mentor there. And it was funny because I showed up for the interview and the general manager asked me a whole bunch of questions about, you know, working for them. And then he wasn't a technical guy and he really didn't know Rails. And so I wound up on the phone with this this programmer named Nate, and he did the interview with me for like 30 or 45 minutes. And you hear all these 8-year-olds screaming in the background because his daughter had a birthday party at the time. And he asked me a question, and I'd give as much of an answer as I felt like I understood. And then he actually explained to me what I had missed. And I wound up getting hired at that job, and he wound up mentoring me for the first year and a half of my programming career.
Wow, that's really cool.
Together on the same contract.
That's really cool because a lot of times with interviews, you just, you know, you get the blank stare or you get the, yeah, that's not quite right, but.
but throughout my career, I've had these kind of people involved. And because of that, it felt natural to help other people. And so the next job I had, I only had a year's worth of experience as a programmer. I wound up as the team lead. I had more real experience with Rails than anybody else on the team. And so I wound up mentoring other people. And I, you know, by all rights, I was a junior developer.
Yeah.
But it's that thing. And if you can set that stage early with people, it does. It carries through.
I think there's something really poignant in there around career advice. A couple of things just to highlight that as I think about it, you know, one is you just kind of went for it with reaching out to people, you know, and in some ways you're fortunate at the time, like the internet wasn't as saturated as it is today with spam and all that, but there still was a fair amount of it. But, you know, you took the leap and then you started making connections, and then, you know, that, fake it till you make it, if you will, or lean into the next level seems, you know, like a really key part of this as well. And so I just wanted to highlight that for our listeners, because that's something like when I'm hiring folks, that's what I look for too, is that lean in, figure it out kind of mentality that says, I'm going to go do this because I want to learn. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing is that all of the people that I've mentioned whether they're high profile people like David Heinemeier Hansson or, you know, maybe have a lower public profile, they all were willing to help out. I mean, just to give another example, you know, with DHH, I was at RailsConf. He'd given the keynote the day before, and I'm walking into the keynote the next day, and I'm walking down the aisle, and I see a seat next to him. And I almost kept walking, right? Because I was super nervous. Yeah. You know, this is one of my heroes. And I took a deep breath, swallowed a little bit of pride, and went and sat next to him and started chatting with him, and then said something like, "You want to come on my show?" Right? And he said yes, and we worked it out. And that's the other thing that I found with a lot of folks is that if there's somebody out there doing something you're interested in, ask. I mean, yeah. Worst case scenario, they're going to be busy and it'll take them a little while to get around to you. Or, you know, they may tell you no because they have something critical going on in their lives. I've had a few people tell me no because, you know, they have some family issue or something going on.
Sure.
But the vast majority of people, they are delighted to talk to you.
Yep. That's the dirty little secret of this podcast too, is, you know, a lot of the guests on there are just people I wanted to learn from. And so I just started emailing. I think this is about 35, 36 episodes in. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've had a whole host of people from a variety of backgrounds. And it was just like, hey, do you want to be on the show? Yep. And just reach out. You know,
having a show helps with that though. People like being on shows.
Yeah. But like my show didn't even exist, you know,
oh, yeah.
for a long time. Like there was no social proof for the show. You know, yeah. Obviously I've got some social proof of being in the community and things like that, but you know, many of them don't know me, have never met me. I just give them a little pitch, the elevator pitch, and say, you know, what do you think? And you know, people like to talk about themselves. So it's a great format. I think what you're doing, and I'm trying to actually emulate that as well here.
Yeah. I just want to make it approachable for people. Right. Yeah. I want to show them that, hey, look, you know, the person that maintains this giant project that you use every day to get your work done is human just like you. I actually have 3 shows on devchat.tv, 2 of which I host, that are similar to this, where I capture somebody's story and we just talk through their journey.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
It's the same idea, right? It's like, look, this is the person that invented, you know, whatever. And they're just a person like you. And sometimes that, you know, sometimes they're the sort of stereotypical genius coder that was a kid that was, you know, hacking on stuff when they were 10. But I would say about 50% of the people we talk to who have done high profile things in the programming community, they picked it up as an adult, and some of them didn't even go to college.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you can be anybody and come do this.
Yeah, for sure. Nah, and that's one of the themes of this show for sure. I want to come back to a specific point in your life, that conversation with your wife of, well, probably, I think there's 2 levels there. The first level of like, I'm going to go be on my own. I'm going to take my career into my own hands. You know, that proverbial, who else would I bet on besides me, uh-huh. kind of thing. Or if you don't feel comfortable betting on yourself, then you probably got a problem, right?
Yeah.
Drill in on that a little bit more, because I think that's such a poignant moment in life of taking that leap. And then, you know, how did you get your first customer? How did you like kind of build out, you know, make a living, as it were? Oh, man.
Well, I don't know if we have time. I'll have to summarize some of it.
Sure.
Yeah. So the conversation went something like this. So I have to set a little bit of the stage. So I got laid off on September 16th of 2010. And I call that Independence Day. It's been almost 10 years. Or beautiful. Almost, yeah, it's been just 9 years, I guess, at this point. So anyway, what happened was we had just done this big, long death march. And if you haven't worked a death march, let me explain. You don't sleep. You work like 80-hour weeks, and they promise you something to make it worth it. So in our case, the iPad was a brand new thing, and they were super cool, and everybody wanted one. And so they bribed us with basically, I think it was a bonus that amounted to more or less double pay for the 2 or 3 weeks that we were doing the death march. Plus we'd get an iPad. So I had the, you know, first gen iPad.
Yep.
Anyway, so we did the death march. And then at the end of the death march, I was actually speaking at a conference here in Utah at a Ruby conference. And so I went up to the conference with my friend, David Brady, who was on Ruby Rogues for a long time. And another mentor of mine, incidentally. And, you know, so we were at the conference. We did all our stuff, came back. I showed up to work that, you know, on that day. And, you know, HR comes in and says, you know, Charles Wood, David Brady, and then another developer that worked with us named Mac called for us to go into the office. Of course, David was late, so he wasn't there. Called us in and basically said, hey, look, the company's going through a reorg. And basically it was, we were in the black, now we're in the red, the board's not happy. They fired the COO, they fired the CIO, they've laid off half of the sales team. They're trying to lay off half of the developers. And, you know, so the three of you are getting the axe. And anyway, so that's kind of how that went. Of course, I texted David about 2 hours later because, you know, he wasn't there when I got laid off. And I got a text back, hang on, I'm getting fired.
Oh, wow.
So that's his dry sense of humor. So anyway, got laid off, came home. And, you know, I looked at my wife and I was like, you know what, I got laid off, blah, blah, blah. But we had that bonus and they gave us a couple of weeks of severance. So I had about a month to month and a half's worth of money in the bank.
Yeah, nice.
And I looked at her and I said, I want to go freelance. And she looked at me and she said something like, okay. And I mean, it was like a 2 or 3 week freak out. Like full on, I could tell that she was not comfortable with it. And her dad's a general contractor and he's been on his own forever. And so he came and he sat down and he talked through it with us a little bit. And she seemed to feel a little bit better about it. And then I just looked at her and I said, look, I said, we've got a month's worth of money. So I'm going to go get a contract. And when, you know, we run out of money between the contract and, you know, the severance and the bonus, then I'll go get a job, right? We won't miss a mortgage payment. I'll just, you know, I'll get a job. And so I was doing the dual job search. I was looking for a job applying to jobs and I was looking for contracts. And I found a company that was looking for a contractor. And of course, I had no idea what I was doing freelancing. I made some friends within that first month that it was a group of guys that were all on the same Skype channel that would help each other out. And so this was after I took the contract though. And it turned out I got the contract because I bid $60 an hour and everyone else bid over $100 an hour because I had no idea. by the way, folks, even if you're new, you should be billing out at least $100 an hour as a contractor. Just you know, free advice. So I got the contract and I had that money coming in and then I had connections from the podcasts and the screencasts. And so people were introducing me to other people out there and I wound up getting lined up with one contract. And then I had another listener to the Rails Coach podcast call me on the phone because I went back on teachmetocode.com. So I guess it was a Teach Me to Code podcast at that point. He called me up on the phone. Because I posted my phone number and said, hey, I listened to your podcast. I want you to build me an app in Rails. And so I never ran out of money. So I kept contracting.
Nice.
And after about a year, my wife was so accustomed to having me at home that sometimes I would joke, well, maybe I should just go get a full-time job. And she'd be like, no. Right? Because she can go run errands. She doesn't have to take the kids. Right? At this point, my youngest is 3. She goes to preschool twice a week. And so, you know, she still takes off and leaves, you know, my daughter with me. But, you know, another couple of years and that won't even be an issue for a good part of the day.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that turned out to be a really, really nice thing. You know, we ran into some issues like getting insurance and things like that, but Sure. For the most part, that's how that worked out. So, you know, my network found me work. And then when I started running out of work, once Ruby Rogues and JavaScript Jabber were picking up steam, if I knew a contract was ending, I would just go on the show and say, hey, I've got a, you know, I've got some opening, some time opening up, and I would always fill it.
You were your own advertising at that point.
Yeah. That wasn't the way that I initially intended it. Initially, it was just, hey, I want to talk to these guys about Ruby every week.
Yeah. But hey, you got a platform. You know,
that's the way it worked out. And yeah, it did. It worked out great. You know, we had thousands of people listening to the shows, and it was like, hey, I need work, and people would come and give me work.
That's fantastic. And I mean, it's nice, again, like how it weaves together, right? Like this, hey, I'm going to take these chances. I'm going to plant some seeds early in my career. I've got my main thing, but I'm always planting seeds. I think in many ways, that's that side hustle mentality, or at least the exploratory approach to careers, which has always been something I've done as well. Let me ask you, before we shift gears and kind of start looking at the here and now and forward, as you reflect back, I mean, what's been something that's been surprising about it all? You know, something that the 18-year-old Chuck would be like, are you kidding me? I did that.
So when I was 18, I'd probably already been accepted to BYU. I graduated high school, went to college. And you know, my mom had kind of, drilled into us. I'm the oldest of 10 children, by the way. So she had kind of drilled into all of us, you know, the life pattern, right? It's, go to college, go on a mission. I'm a Latter-day Saint, member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You go to churchofjesuschrist.org if you want to know more about that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so she, you know, go on a mission and get married in the temple, right? Because that's the way we do it.
Right.
So, So I just figured that was the way, right? And then I guess the unspoken one was, and get a good job. And so, you know, that was the path, right? And so I, growing up and, you know, 18, I just assumed that I was just going to go get a corporate job somewhere doing something in tech because I love tech. And I would just work that out until I retired. And then I'd probably go on more missions when I was old and, you know, with whoever I wound up marrying, and that would be it.
Yeah.
And what it turned out, the way that things have gone, is that the more that I have realized, you know, A, who I am as a person and what I want, and then have had more or less the audacity to go get it. So, hey, I want to do podcasts, and oh, I love this, I'm going to do more podcasts, right? When I started my first podcast, I never, ever thought that it would become a career. And I didn't even think that was a possibility, right? I was just doing it for fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same thing with the screencast, you know, some people would donate money to me and that was awesome, you know, and I saw people like Ryan Bates doing Railscasts and, oh, okay, so maybe I can make a little bit of side money, right? But it was all just playtime.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same thing with software development. You know, once I figured out that I really enjoyed doing it, which wasn't in college, it was, you know, later in my career when I was in management, you know, going, okay, well, I'm going to go for it, right? I was in management, then I was in QA at that company. And QA was a stepping stone to moving into development. And everybody thought I was nuts for giving up on the management track.
Yeah.
But it was what I wanted. And, you know, it's interesting because that's where my energy pointed me. It was where my thought process was. It was what I really wanted to do, where I really wanted to be. And I allowed myself to dream about it. And just by doing that much, and then, you know, taking a step that direction and then another one, you know, not even really even daring hope that it could become a reality. And then realizing that, you know, if I reach for it, and now I'm to the point where it's like, I want that. And then I go work my tail off to get it because I've realized at this point that I can control it. I can control the ship.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the idea behind, you know, what would 18-year-old Chuck be blown away by? It's basically that I have just, you know, I've looked at what I wanted and I've basically become the guy who can go out and get whatever I want. And all I have to do is work hard enough at it.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. So many powerful things in there, I think, in terms of how you think about your career, because I can echo similar things of like this notion of guided exploration as I've reflected back is, you know, has been something that has underpinned a lot of it. I wasn't actually very intentional, and there's a lot of intentionality speak these days, but to me, like this notion of, yes, you set up some foundational things in your life and you kind of set up a framework, but then you have this ability to go explore what you like and what you discover later, such that you're not stuck with this, you know, here's what 18-year-old Chuck wants. You have that freedom in your own mind to go explore. I think that's a really powerful piece. And it's not necessarily just about following your passion when you're 18. It's about being open to new possibilities when you're 26. It sounds like you did that. So that's awesome, Chuck. Kudos to you for having the courage to do that.
Yeah. One other thing I just want to add to that is that when I was 18, there was a plan, right? I was going to go on my mission. I was going to come back. I was going to finish my bachelor's degree, and then I was going to go get a PhD. And as time went on, then it turned into I was going to get a law degree. And then I graduated with my bachelor's degree, and I was done with school. And, you know, and then the plan was to get married at, you know, 21, 22, you know, real young, because, you know, that's what I felt like I was supposed to do.
That's what you
know,
do.
That's the way it's supposed to work out. And I didn't meet my wife until I was 25. And, you know, and so all of these things have been, you know, deviations from the plan, and none of it was wrong. And I think that's the other thing is we get this idea of how things are supposed to be, and we're not brave enough to go out and get away from that. And you miss so many opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, those people that are up there somewhere aren't that different from you. If you can just kind of realize that might be where you want to end up, or maybe you're fine, you know, being in the background and pushing the company from behind, and that's fine too. But it doesn't have to follow this prescripted script for your life.
Yeah.
You know, figure out what's working for you, what's making you happy, and go do that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and especially if you can intersect it with ways to, you know, put food on the table. Yeah. I think you're answering my last question. So I'm going to perhaps come back to that a little bit here. And I know we're nearing the end of this episode, but I want to focus a little bit of time on, you know, what's this landscape look like for you now? You're in this podcast business. I mean, it's podcasts have skyrocketed, and and so in many ways, like that early mover advantage that you had is now morphed into, like, you know, hey, there's a guy like me who's got a podcast. There's anybody can podcast at some level. That doesn't mean everybody's good at podcasting, of course, but how do you think about that space now of being in the tech podcasting business?
So I have a few thoughts. One of the first ones is, you know, you're like, well, you know, you had this early mover advantage. And I guess if you're, you know, 30 episodes, you know, 30-ish weeks into your podcast, then yeah, I have an early mover advantage just compared to you.
Yeah, for sure.
But podcasting is still early. It's still early days. It's still growing. It's going to grow. It's going to continue to grow a lot. I see podcasting growing to the point where it becomes as mainstream as TV, radio. I think YouTube has room to grow, YouTube-ish stuff.
Yeah.
And so we're going to see a lot of the internet media continue to grow over the next 5 to 10 years. So, you know, anybody who starts now still has early mover advantage.
Whew.
The other thing that I see here is that in some ways the medium is going to change just like everything else has. Yeah. I don't know exactly where it's going to go. We're seeing a lot more people doing a lot more interesting things with the podcast medium. So that's interesting. You know, and you can go look at like the new categories in iTunes just for an idea, right? You know, we have things like crime dramas being their own, or true crimes, true crime dramas being their own thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, stuff like that. So people are telling more stories on podcasts and things like that. But yeah, I think more and more people are going to continue to find their tribes just as they've done on social media, but through podcasts and things like that. The other thing is that I think more and more brands are going to recognize the power of putting a message out there through podcasting. And I think we're going to see a lot more corporate podcasts come out over the next few years.
Interesting.
So, you know, those are a few things that I kind of foresee coming. As far as the software industry goes, you know, since we're working so closely in this space and talk to so many people, I think we're on the cusp of a big change there. And I don't know if it's going to be in 1 year or 5 years, but I think we're getting really close to a few things. One of them is basically that a lot more people are realizing that they have a lot more power to control their own destiny within their career. And so I'm trying to help people figure that stuff out. I'm actually working on a membership site that covers a lot of this stuff. Nice. I've created the concept of the Max Coder. It's kind of a deviation off of the 10X engineer, because I hate that term. And, yeah. You know, but I love the idea of, you know, what somebody that's out there and just maxing out what they're doing. And Max Coders is kind of a play on my name.
For sure.
My middle name is Max. My dad's name was Max. You know, and he was super poor and pulled himself out of poverty and became a dentist. I mean, he went and got a doctorate degree, and, you know, and, the same thing here, right? I've had all of these mentors and people help me build my career, and I want to help other people do that too. So, you know, I think we're going to see a lot more movement in that space, just as far as people figuring out where they fit in and what they want, and then being able to go and get it. A lot of companies are going to become a lot more decentralized. And I don't know if, I think the web is going to become more and more of a backbone detail. And I think we're going to see some other interesting technologies come through. And I don't know if that's AR and VR. I don't know if it's IoT, probably some combination of the two. You know, blockchain may play a role in that. I'm seeing interesting things being said on both sides of that argument. But yeah, you know, we're going to continue to shape the future and the possibilities of what life really looks like for people over the next several years as well. And that's going to impact the industry as it comes back around to what the possibilities are and just how accessible technology is to people. Not just from the standpoint of how it impacts their life, but what people can make it do as, you know, what we consider programmers. And so we're going to see some changes come through in a lot of ways. It's going to affect corporate, and it's going to affect technology. And it'll be interesting to see how that all adds up to what we consider programming in the future.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, add on to that, things like AI-assisted programming, AI-assisted design, product design, like all of those things where, you know, essentially we have the computers helping us explore an idea space such that we can produce new things. I mean, those are some really powerful
capabilities. And that ties deeply into data science.
Yeah.
Which pulls a lot of data from IoT. I mean, it all connects.
Yeah. It all ties together for sure. Let's shift gears in the interest of time and kind of wrap up with what I like to ask all my guests as some final questions. I think in many ways you answered this first one already a bit ago, but, you know, kind of sum up, if you will, this best piece of advice, you know, the Max advice, if you will, to play on your new forum that you're starting, you know,
right,
around your career.
So I have a brother and a cousin who are taking computer science right now. and they're probably going to graduate soon. One's going to BYU and the other one's going to Western Governors University, which is online. Western Governors Online. BYU is, you know, it's, they've got lots of buildings over in Provo.
Yep.
So they've both asked me on different occasions, what skills do I need to be successful once I graduate? And, you know, they're getting ready to write down, you know what, you need to understand these algorithms or something from their class. And I looked at them and I said, the skill you need is your ability to work with people. Yeah. Specifically, what that boils down to is your ability to communicate well with other people. And they kind of looked at me funny and I said, these companies, if you can work well with other people, and you've proven, you know, you have a piece of paper that says bachelor's degree on it, you've proven that you can understand the technology, they'll teach you the technology and they'll be happy to do it. But if you can't work with other people, if you can't communicate about these issues, because anymore building technology that means anything out in the world is a team sport. Yeah. You know, it's all so complicated anymore that you're going to be building it with other people and you're going to need the other people involved to get it deployed and functioning and, you know, everything like that. And yeah, to a certain degree, you can figure some of this stuff out on your own. But if you're going to work at a company and they're going to hire you, that's what they're looking for. They're going to be looking more and more for those kinds of soft skills. And so if I can encourage people to do anything in their career, a lot of times we get focused on those hard technical skills. And, you know, don't get me wrong, that's important because that's how you get your work done. But by far, the thing that's going to disqualify you from getting a job or give you the most job security is your ability to contribute to the team. And that's not going to be your technical knowledge as much as it's going to be how well you can interface with everybody else and bring the whole team up.
Yeah, that's I couldn't have said it any better. It's so true, Chuck. I mean, it reflects my own career path. That moment when that light bulb went off of saying, you know what, I need to work on my soft skills. Career career trajectory took off.
Yep.
Got paid more. I had more opportunities. I got more interviews. I got more offers. Everything across the board got better. And I can point to a very specific point in time when I started making those investments.
Yep. And that's what Max Coders is all about. You know, I'm putting it all up on maxcoders.io.
That's awesome.
And yeah, it's, hey, look, you know, yeah, we're going to talk about doing a job search and we're going to talk about, you know, putting together a resume. And we're going to talk about how to learn stuff and, you know, how to make sure that you understand the technology. We're going to talk about all of that stuff. But ultimately, we're also going to talk about these critical skills that you have to have in order to be successful. And they're not going to be the technical skills.
That's really cool. That probably is a good segue into my last question for you then is, you know, where can our listeners get a hold of you? You've got devchat.tv, Max Coders, you know, fill us in on the universe that is Charles Max Wood and how we can connect with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a few places. I do check my Twitter notifications. So if you at CMAXW or CMAXW, that's my first initial, middle name, last initial, I'll reply, period. So, you know, you can do that. You can DM me. If you want to talk face to face, go to devchat.tv/15 minutes. That's devchat.tv/15 minutes. It'll take you to a place where you can actually schedule a Zoom call with me for 15 minutes. Wow. And I'll answer any questions you have. I'm happy to help people. I also have a newsletter that I put out every week, and it's about the same kinds of things that we're talking about with Max Coders. Just go to devchat.tv, put your email address in any of the forms on there. And yeah, you'll get those emails every week, along with a roundup of all the episodes that we're putting out every week and things like that. And yeah, I mean, people are welcome to email me too. It's just chuck@devchat.tv. And like I said, I'm happy to help people out. I really, really love talking to people and seeing if I can make a difference. And that's really the big payoff for me, right? I mean, my kids get to eat every day, so that's not a concern. You know, we live in a decent house, so that's not a concern. So, you know, at this point, it's, you know what, I'm trying to put as much out there into the world to make a difference for developers. And sometimes it's, the general stuff that we talk about on the podcast. And sometimes it's the one-on-one stuff that, you know, comes out of an email when somebody has a quick question or, you know, needs advice because they can't seem to get anybody to call them back when they send them their resume. And like I said, I'm happy to help people with any of that stuff.
Awesome, Chuck. I mean, that is so cool. So many great ways of getting hold of you. And I love that you're living that value that you learned and talked about back early on of if somebody's asking, you've got a means for you to engage with them. May not be right off the bat, but
yeah, you know, I should also mention maxcoders.io. So the plan there, it's not just going to be a forum and, you know, I'm planning on putting up video lessons and things like that. I'm also planning on doing a Q&A call every month. I'm also planning on bringing in experts and people out in the field to come do a webinar essentially for members every month. And yeah, just putting all that stuff together so that people have the resources that they need. And sometimes I'm not the right guy to answer those questions, and that's why I'm bringing in some of these other folks. So awesome. Yeah, that's the big picture plan for that, is just to make sure that we are hitting every angle we can to help those people succeed. And you can just go sign up at maxcoders.io. It is a paid membership, but I'm trying to strike that balance between affordability and being able to pay enough to make good use of my time, if that makes sense.
That makes total, well, as a content producer, it makes total sense to me. I mean, you know, you put out a lot that is free for people to consume. I'm totally fine that somebody can come along and say, here's things that aren't free. That's how the world works. And I don't see any shame in that. So, hey, Chuck, thank you again. So many amazing things in there. And I love the career arcs. I especially love the moments with your grandfather there. That is stuff that, you know, you wish every kid had in their life, because the world would be a lot better place. So I want to thank you very much for joining me here today.
Yeah. Well, thanks for inviting me. This has been really fun.
Yeah, no doubt. I really enjoyed the conversation. As always, for our listeners, if you like the show, of course, we'd love for you to subscribe, give us feedback, rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc. You always can visit us at developmentor.com to hear older episodes, to listen to this one again, to hear that info that Chuck put out there. Of course, we will also be linking up all of that information in the show notes. Thank you again.
Yep. Two things. As a podcaster, the biggest thing that you can do to help Grant out is tell a friend, get them to listen to the show. And then the other thing is just go for it. Yeah, Max out, everybody.
Thanks, Max.